Today on Vox Talks, how has lockdown changed how all of us value online services? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Facebook, Google Search and Twitter aren't measured in GDP because, well, we don't pay for them when we use them. But that doesn't mean they don't have value for us, especially at a time when we're all stuck in our homes. An innovative new study just published in COVID Economics by Diane Coyle of the University of Cambridge and David Nguyen of the National Institute of Economic and Social Research has used the COVID-19 lockdown in the UK as a natural experiment to discover how the value we put on digital services has changed in the last few months. And we've had Diane on Vox Talks as a guest before to talk about how she would improve the way we measure GDP. So when I spoke to her about this research, I first of all asked her why she thinks it's important to give a value to these services.
The reason we set about this work was that we're interested in measuring some unpaid for activities that people are asking, should it be counted in GDP or not? And this started with thinking about things like free online search or map services or social media. And a piece of work by Eric Brynjolfsson and his colleagues in the United States assigned some very high values when they tried some surveys and experiments with people. And they suggested adding it to GDP. So we thought we would look at it for the UK, but also test the approach by including some other types of free goods like access to parks or free-to-air television like the BBC, and also some paid-for goods that compete with free things online, so newspapers and cinemas, for example, because we want to try and understand better the way people think about these values for which there isn't an obvious price, and can we benchmark that against things for which there is a price, and can we compare it to other things that are valuable in our lives but aren't sold in the market.
The main problem with this is that if we're not paying for a service, it's not easy to assign a value to it. One of the ways to get to a value might be to ask us how much we think it's worth, but that's a tricky process.
We are using a technique that economists call contingent valuation, and fundamentally it means asking people what values they place on things. But you need to do this in quite a careful way. First of all, because people are just answering off the top of their head. They might have strategic reasons for answering in a certain way. You know, if you don't want a development built next to your house, you're going to say that you really value the green space very highly. And there can be inconsistencies in how people think about values over time as well. And there's a lot of evidence from behavioural economics that actually the way you ask the question changes the answers that people give. So you need to construct the surveys quite carefully. We were testing something called willingness to accept. How much would it take you to be paid to give up access to this particular good for a month or a year?
While asking how much we'd pay to keep something isn't perfect for outright valuations, not least because if you turn the question round and ask how much we'd be prepared to pay for it if we didn't have it, you get a completely different set of numbers. We can still learn a lot if you ask the same questions in the same way at two different times. And even more if one of those times is before the lockdown and the other one during it. And that's precisely what Diane and David have done here.
We had some hypotheses about what the changes in valuation would be between February and May. And so, for example, access to parks we thought would go up, access to online shopping services would go up, and the kinds of things that people are not doing anymore, like using ride-hailing services or map services, would go down. And so comfortingly, those are the kinds of results that we did get. So it helps to validate the sort of approach that we're taking, that you get completely plausible results. But also the demographic differences are quite interesting too. And so you can use this approach to get insights about the differences between men and women, between different age groups and different social groups.
So how exactly did they do this? Well, to get a robust survey, David and Diane used the online polling company YouGov, whose database of respondents is large enough to be representative of the UK population as a whole. David explains.
So we're comparing the period at the end of February, so well ahead of the lockdown in the UK, and mid-May. So just for context, the UK went into lockdown on the 23rd of March, and Italy, as the first European country, went into lockdown on the 9th of March. So at the end of February, we are well ahead of that, and hence we're confident that the baseline survey of around 10,000 adults living in Great Britain is actually not considerably influenced by the coronavirus crisis. In total, we have included around 30 goods and services in our survey, and we chose them based on three factors. The first is the number of time that users spent on using them. The second is the previous literature, so we want to be comparable to other studies that have done similar things. And third, we had to include a broad number of categories or different categories, so we try to branch out in that sense. And we didn't just measure the willingness to accept for Facebook search and headline online services, but we actually want to include some non-digital ones as well, such as public parks, radio, TV sets, and cinema. So the reasons for this is basically that there's a longer trend in the substitution of physical with digital products. So we could see this, for example, when online streaming took over, let's say DVD or TV, WhatsApp is being used for SMS, if you remember those. There's shopping online it's as opposed to shopping in brick and mortar shops. In the sense, there has been a wider trend from offline to online goods and services for some of them. And in a way, the COVID-19 crisis has kind of fast-tracked that within a couple of weeks, these substitutions. And some of them have simply become unavailable offline. So in order to have a look what has gone up or gone down in terms of valuations, we need to ask for some non-digital ones as well. So, for example, if you couldn't go to the cinema anymore now, we saw, of course, large increases in the usage of Netflix. And while we don't expect haircuts to be delivered online anytime soon, we think that actually some others, such as video conferencing for meetings, seminars, and now entire conferences, could actually be here to stay.
Okay, so which valuations went up and which ones went down?
We see that people's valuations have changed or increased the most for online grocery shopping and online learning. But we also see large increases in valuations for online communication tools, including WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and so on, as well as online streaming platforms such as Netflix or mobile gaming apps on people's phones. Interestingly, the value for public parks and TV sets has actually also increased. At the same time, we also see a certain drop in valuations for some mainly commuting-related services. So here we see drops in valuations for radio, Spotify, which you might think actually substitutes, but we do see there's still quite high usages of radio, especially if you think about people commuting by car, and printed newspapers as well. At the same time, obviously, mobility apps such as Google Maps, City Mapper, ride-hailing apps such as Uber and so on, the usage and hence also the valuations of those have dropped over this period. The final category of services where we saw decrease in valuations are more work-related. So we're thinking of Twitter, LinkedIn, and overall, obviously, also the value of going to the cinema has dropped for many people simply because it wasn't available.
The database is big enough also to be able to split out the results by gender, age, and social class. David again.
For example, if we look at the breakdown of valuations by age, we could see that overall, younger people do tend to place higher valuations on most digital services and older groups more on offline or non-digital services. While this is not really surprising, we actually saw quite interesting and considerable variation across these age groups when we look at the changes in valuations between end of February and mid-May. So, for example, the value of Facebook, which has been already quite high for young age groups, increased significantly for those about 65 and those below 25. So in a way, we could see that now they might have been reaching younger generations or very young generations as well as older ones, which they couldn't target before. At the same time, online shopping increased for all age groups, but significantly more for those older age groups, so above 50 and particularly those above 65. Older people also increased their valuations of Wikipedia, while those between 18 and 25 increased the valuations of public parks, the BBC iPlayer, and radio also. Now, if we look at differences across social class, we could see that people classified as grade E, which includes pensioners, casual workers, and those that are unemployed, they reported increases in LinkedIn, for example, which we found interesting. People in grade D, which includes semi and unskilled manual workers, increased their valuations of online learning by more than 400%, and also Wikipedia. People that are in grade A, so these are high administrative and professional workers, saw largely declines in valuations for most goods and services, apart from online shopping and YouTube. Finally, we looked at the split of changes in valuations by gender, and to do so, we computed the ratio of valuations between men and women. And so, first of all, it's quite interesting to see that there are quite significant differences in valuations between men and women. For example, social media services are more highly valued by women, apart from Twitter, which for some reason, and I can unfortunately confirm that, is valued more highly by men, who also have higher valuations for YouTube, Wikipedia, and Skype.
But, interesting as these valuations are, both David and Diane are still advising that we don't overinterpret them, for example, by just bundling them up and adding them all to GDP.
I am quite cautious about using these contingent valuation results. We do know that the way you ask the question shapes the answer quite substantially. So it isn't an absolute number, like you go to the supermarket and you pay a pound for your loaf or whatever it might be. So I wouldn't put too much weight on the actual number that we get.
There's two things we should certainly at this point not do with our results. The first thing, I think, is that we shouldn't interpret the overall magnitude of the valuations. So while the magnitudes of the valuations are in line with what other people have found, we do think that they're not necessarily well anchored. So I think we need some further research into the magnitudes, because they appear quite high. The other thing I would say is that one should not add up different valuations. If we say there's a certain value for Facebook, for WhatsApp, and then for public parks and online shopping, we shouldn't go around adding all of these together and say, okay, this is the consumer surplus that we get from certain goods and services, simply because there's certain interdependencies between them that we don't yet fully understand. So we do need more research on that. What we do have a bit more confidence is in the ranking of different goods and services. And we think that growth rates are actually what is most interesting here. So we have more confidence in looking at how the values have changed over our period of analysis.
This doesn't mean that these methods have nothing to tell policymakers, though.
What it does tell us is that people do value quite highly these kinds of free services, which has policy implications. If you think, for example, about the debate in competition policy now about the market power of the digital giants, it's clear that we need to do something about that to create the opportunity for new companies to enter the market and serve people better over time. But to disrupt the services that people are enjoying is something that you need to do with caution, because the values that are placed on them are quite high.
I do think, and I hope, that more people will look at these kind of contingency valuation methods. One reason is that simply measuring the economy in terms of how much we pay for it is something which is actually becoming increasingly difficult and even unrealistic, since many products that we are consuming are actually free at the point of use. The other reason is that we increasingly bundle stuff together, for example, within streaming contracts, or we customize them down all the way to the individual. So that makes it very, very difficult to adjust for product quality, which is a key job of national accounts and national economic statistics.
I think policymakers should be thinking about these kinds of approaches, because things that don't have a market price do have value. And we don't have many techniques in economics for getting at that. This is the main one that we have. So cautious as you ought to be, and having a number for some of these services is better than a zero, which is what we use at the moment. And that has some quite important implications for policy, not just in the digital territory, but also in the natural environment and the importance of people's access to green space and the quality of the air and so on. We put them as a zero in the conventional economic statistics. They're obviously worth a lot, and we should be trying to put a value on those.
Like COVID-19, this debate is far from over, and it affects mergers, regulations, even how we measure productivity in the future. So read the paper and decide for yourself. It's in COVID Economics 33, and the title is Valuing Goods Online and Offline, The Impact of COVID-19. If you want a shorter version, then the same authors have published a column in Vox.eu, and that's called The Impact of COVID-19 on the Value of Online Goods. And of course, if you want a longer read, Diane's book about what GDP is, how we measure it, and why that matters for policy is called GDP, A Brief But Affectionate History, and that's published by Princeton University Press. This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so subscribe to Vox Talks, you'll never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.